But with Canadian, you have a choice. You can file or not file.
Okay, Rebel, so we'll go back to Aylin Iris. Aylin Iris. And we were talking about Nesina, and then we want to go on and go through the sugya in Sa'ar. So let's just finish up on Nesina, so then we can go through the sugya in Sa'ar. So the most perplexing or challenging shita in Nesina is the Ravid. The Ravid, on the one hand, belongs to the school of thought that Nesina is a doraisa lo tischatein bam, but for an entirely different reason. The other Rishonim, that means Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramban, they understand that Lo Tischatein Bam applies simply because these people belong to the Zion Umos. On the other hand, the Ravid says that we're talking after Gerus. So if it's after Gerus, then the question should be posed, well, that's not Zion Umos. This individual may have been born to Zion Umos, but now is converted. And after the conversion, they become part of the Ummah Yisraelis. So why should you apply the principle of Lo Tischatein Bam, the law of Lo Tischatein Bam? So the Ravid, based on this problem, comes up to a pretty far-reaching conclusion that the issue of Nesina or Givonim has nothing to do with Zion Amim. It has to do with the nature of their Gerus. And he says the following, that Gerus is split into two. There's one dimension of Gerus, which is Tayag Mitzvahs. Let's call it Kedushas Yisrael Lechiv Mitzvahs, Shekinshara Mitzvahs of Itzivanu. But then the Ravid says there's another element to Gerus, and that is Knisa Lakal. And that's as far as Ishus is concerned. You could have a split between these two dimensions of Gerus. That's the Pella of the Ravid. You can have, on the one hand, the Gerus being valid as far as Tayag Mitzvahs is concerned. So this individual, male or female, underwent Gerus and now is Chayvim Mitzvahs. But yet there's not yet the second level of Gerus, the complete Gerus, of Knisa Lakal. And he says that's the issue of the Givonim. What happened in the case of the Givonim is that they were not motivated to become Jewish because they loved the Jewish people, loved the Jewish religion. They were doing so before because they were afraid of the might and the power of Yeshua and his military forces. And therefore, they decided with this whole camouflage to become Gerim. Says the Ravid, that Gerus is only a partial Gerus. We can really split Gerus into two. The Gerus itself is valid as far as a personal commitment to Klal Yisrael in terms of mitzvos, but not to change the person and his status, or in the case of an Asina Hajj status, as far as Knisa Lakal is concerned. For that, we need another level of Gerus.
One could say that since it was only because of fear, why did they even get enter into the first level?
Correct. And there definitely would be many Rishonim who would argue against the Ravid based on the Sugi of Kusim, where the Gemara says that the Kusim came from afar and, you know, Melech Ashur brought them in to fill in some of the gaps of the 10 tribes that were exiled. And they were nervous about the Arayos, not with an iron, with an olive, and they thought they were going to be swallowed up by the lions because they were pagans and they worshipped idols. So they decided, let's jump on the ship of the Jewish people, and that's going to save us from the lions. And one school of thought would have it that that's not Gerus at all, even as far as Tayag Mitzvahs is concerned.
So if you say, if you accept the Tayag Mitzvahs, that the Gerus is a good Gerus, they severed their connection entirely with the Ummah, with the Givonim.
Right, so this is the radical Chiddush of the Ravid, that when you say severed your relationship, it depends what relationship you're talking about. For example, in the case of Rus, right, Rus says, Amech Ami Velokai Chalukai. So the Ravid, I think, would say the following. Amech Ami means, I want to become part of the nation. Right? And that means that I want to be able to intermarry with the Jewish people. I'm a Jew. I have a national identity as a Jew. That's what it says on my Tudat Zehut, right? Elokai Chalukai means that I want to be part of the Jewish religion. You know, I don't want to necessarily be part of the Jewish nation. But so Rus accepted both. You know, she had a full-fledged geirus. She identified as a Jew both in terms of her religious commitment to the Targum Mitzvahs and in terms of her identification as a Jew. She would identify as a Jew for all the tzaras that God brings upon this nation. So there are two dimensions of entering into or being a kikot and shenola, Tommy. You know, one is that I join the mishpacha of Klal Yisrael, that's called Amechan Mi, and the other is that I'm part of the mitzvos of Klal Yisrael. In other words, instead of seven mitzvahs, I now am reborn as a Jew with Kedushas Yisrael in Yin Tariag mitzvahs. And the Ravitz Chiddush is that it's not necessarily a package deal, and it's not Hava HaTalia. You could actually separate these two dimensions and formulate independence between the two. You could possibly have a personal commitment to mitzvahs, and that gerus makes you into a katan shenola dummy as far as mitzvahs is concerned, and instead of zayin you have tayyad. But at the same time, Beis Din was not makabel you as a full-fledged ger to enter into the call. For that, Beis Din has its own rules and regulations. And if Beis Din thinks that you're just a thorn in our side, that you're not really motivated because of your love of the people, then you become like a fifth column. You always remain separate. So Beis Din could decide that we're not going to accept you as ger. So therefore, as far as Lo Tischate Inbam in the Ravitz frame of reference, this has nothing to do with Zion Umos. This really has to do simply with the fact that the Geirus was incomplete. Now the Ravitz introduces a concept called Tchiloson. And he says the following, that although the first generation of Givonim were not sincere about the Geirus, hence Beis Din wasn't makabel them as Geirim L'Knisa L'Kol, well, what happens, says the Ravid, if during the future history of the people of Gimon, of these Nesinim, a particular individual comes along and on his own initiative, not out of fear, not because the Jews are marching into the land, but because they genuinely want to become Gerim in the full sense, can we accept them as Gerim? And here the Ravid differentiates between Da'oraisa and Darabana. And he says the following, on a Da'oraisa level, there's no reason under the sun to exclude them from full-fledged Gerim. They came with a sincerity, and we should be Makabalim as Gerim, and they should be Gerim Gemurim, even as far as Knesset L'Kol. However, David HaMelech Gazar Aleihem. That's the language of the Gemara in Yevamos. And what does it mean, Gazar Aleihem? He said, no, we're not going to be makabel them as gerim for Knesset L'Kol, because Staman Kitchiloson, that's the Ravitz Chiddush, that's his formulation. Staman Kitchiloson means that we always assume, even though the facts and figures seem to indicate else, you know, otherwise, that they are, you know, joining up or following in the footsteps of Tchiloson, of the original Nesinim, the original Givonim. So at this point, the Lotus Chateinbom, Ludore Doros, becomes Dirabanan. Now watch what happens according to the Ramban. The Ramban Shita is that the entire Isur Lo Tischatinbom is only applicable in the first generation. So for future generations, for sure there's no Isur Lo Tischatinbom. But here's where the Mishkanos HaRoim quotes a Me'iri. And the Me'iri seems to be very, very similar to the Ravid, but he parts ways from the Ravid on one, what seems to be secondary point, but really is very, very primary. And he says the following.
Where is this?
This is on page Ayin Dalet, which would be the flip side of your first page, in the paragraph that starts, V'chein kasa beheja me'iri. You have that?
Right column.
The right column, sorry. And the Me'iri says the following. Dafka heim atzvam v'toldoseim kayotzeven, meaning if we have an assumption that the children and the grandchildren, all descendants of these Givonim, are standing on the shoulders of their ancestors, and they want to be Gerim like their ancestors were, who became Gerim at the time of Yoshua, then at that point we have to assume that it's not a complete valid Gerus, because they're just reiterating and mimicking what their grandparents said. Aval, but however, kol shechazru b'neim v'niskayru mitchila. Mitchila means we can cut or sever the relationship between them and their earlier ancestors. They're not coming and you know, how should I say, you know, passing the baton from one dart to the other, but rather it's a tchilas gerus, as the Meiri calls, meaning they come on their own volition to become gerim. Hareyem minat Torah kishar gerim. The Torah would now recognize their gerus as a full-fledged gerus, and therefore the Beis Din would accept them even as far as knisa l'kol. She'ein lahem iser l'doros mishin isgairu l'shem yisraelus l'gamrei, which means that when David HaMelech instituted his gzera, he enacted the gzera, it didn't include for all generations every situation and every status of the Givonim from now until doomsday, forevermore. There's no Leolam Voed here in the parasha. And therefore, if there would be a Geris Mitchila, which would mean L'shem Yisraelus L'gamrei, and these people want to be Jews in the full sense, not just to accept the religion and thinking that would save them from the devil, right, from the Arayos, so the lions, but rather to become literally identified with the Jewish people, that's a whole different story. The Efshan, therefore, the Meiri raises the possibility Bamesha Omru she David Gazar, that David made it zera, Pirish Shechazar v'gazal inyan isal doros. So here the word V'efshan means that the Meiri is vacillating back and forth. He says, do we assume that David HaMelech made an absolute all-inclusive Isur, that since Stan Kitchila, so meaning the Givonim through the generations are just standing on the shoulders of their grandfathers, they're just doing what their grandparents did, and they're going to observe the mitzvahs, but they're not really interested in identifying. Therefore, we're going to make an absolute all-inclusive gzera, which would close the door on any gerus whatsoever, even if it was l'shem Yisraelus legamrei, k'shechazru Yisraelus legamrei. So the Meiri opens up a vista for the possibility that as the generations go on, we could possibly accept the Givonim, I mean the future Givonim, as full-fledged gerim, allowing them to be gerim, because they're not included in the gzeres David HaMelech. David HaMelech would only be included in the case of Staman Kitchilosim. But if we know, and they explicitly declare they want to, out of their own volition, become full-fledged Jews, then we can accept them as Gerim, even on a Derabbanan level.
What act do these future generation Gibbonim have to do to prove their intention?
Interesting. I don't know. I would think the following, that if there's no imminent danger against anyone, meaning the Jewish people are not, you know, Mighty Mouse, you know, with the big M on his sweatshirt, you know, that no one's fearing the Jews, they're not some sort of military power to be reckoned with, then if the Nussin or Nesina comes forward and says in front of the Beis Din, I'm not marrying a Jew, I'm not afraid of any military, I'm not afraid of the lions, then we have every reason to believe they're sincere. But just give me one more moment, Rabbi, because I want to see if the text of the sefer that you have in front of you will bear me out. Okay, so if you can, fast forward for a moment to the last four lines in the right column. Do you see where he says Lefi Divrei HaMeiri Hanal? So I want to see if his sikum, if his summary here, will confirm what I thought the Meiri was saying. Let's just see. He says, the Elu Shen is Gairu, Eini Surim in Torah, David Gozar Isu Doros al Elu Shen is Gairu, Mashma, the Afshe Ein Makabel Mosom Bezdim, Mikomakom im Nisgairu, Nechshovim Me Torah, Kegerim Gumurim, Afle Inyan Chitun. Okay, so the truth is, I have to admit, he doesn't say what I said. I would have been much more excited. Again, he almost says what I said, except that he adds two words here, Nechshavim min haTorah. I would have omitted those two words. So basically he's saying that on a Doraisa level, they are Gerim Gemurim, and we're talking about Lidoros, but Midrabanan, based on the Gzera of David HaMelech, we have an Isur Lidoros. So it's only Dirabanan. Let me go back to the beginning of that paragraph for a moment where he summarizes the view of the Ravid. He says, L'das ha-rayv mashma bilshona she'achar gzeres dovet shal kibir shal kabel mem gerim nishru v'isar chitu min ha-Torah. So again, the way the Mishkanos HaRoim presents the machlokas between the Raivin and the Meiri is the following. Down the line, if the ger comes on his own volition from the Giv'onim, the Raivin would say that as a result of the gzeres dovet, there's going to be an isar da'oraisa of lotus chatein bon. Because basically David is going to make sure that Bezdin will not be makabel them as Gerim, as far as Knesset Lekol is concerned. The Meiri, on the other hand, is going to say Dover v'Pucho, the way that the Mishkan Ilsa Roman presents it. Namely, on the one hand, Bezdin will be Megayer them, Haraya Doraisa, there is no Lotus Chatein Bom. But nevertheless, since David made Gzera and he said Ein Makabel no Som, David engendered or initiated an Isur Derabbanan of Lotus Chatein Bom, of an Isur Knesset Lekol. Personally, I find that a very difficult position, you know, to say on the one hand that on a Doraisa level Bezdin is Makabel them as Gerus, and then to say, well, David made a Gzera not to be Makabel them as Gzera, and end up with an Isur Derabbanan of Lotus Chatein Bom. I don't know how that. Just the mechanics of it, I don't understand. Meaning, I understand well the mechanics of the Raivin. The Raivin is saying if David made Xer that Bezdin should not be Makabel them as Gerim, hence they're back in the old Isur, the original Isur Lotus Chatein Bom on a Doraisa level. In the Meiri's frame of reference, the way he presents it, it's very odd because he's saying that with the Raisa we were Makabel them as Gerim, they can enter into the call. There's no Isur Lotus Chatein Bom, but with Rabbanon, there's going to be. He describes it, David Gazro Lehem Lidoros, Al Elush and his Gairu Mashma Di Afsha Ein Mekablim Osam Bezdin. And that he's saying is only an Isur Derabbanan, any Surah Min HaTorah. So I don't know if Bezdin is, if as a result of, in the aftermath of Gzeres David, Bezdin will not be Mekablim as Gerim. So why are they Gerim? Why does he say the Milaraisa? They are Gerim and there's no Isur Lotus Chatein. The mechanics eludes me here.
The first part is based on the for the previous Givon, right? In other words, by the Givonim. But here he says, if I have them today and they are regular Givon, then I do accept them.
Right, so why does he say that David would create some sort of an Isur Derabbanan? And in the same breath, he says, the Ein Mekablim Osam Bezdin. You understand what my problem is, Sammy? If we are very, what word am I looking for? Litzayet, how do you say in English? If we're very obedient, right? Obedient to David's Gzera, then, and that's why he says, Ein Mekablim Osam Bezdin. And how can he say in the same breath that on a Doraisa level they are Gerim, if we're not going to be Mekablim as Gerim? That's why I don't understand. I don't want to make a big deal about it because, again, I don't want to belabor this. I want to move on. But yeah.
Is it possible that there's a difference between the original group conversion where they all came, the Givonim came to Yeshua,
and mass.
All of us won, as opposed to something that happens later on where you have, even though the language doesn't bear it out because it's plural and plural, but you do have individuals or a small constituted group of people who want to join up as opposed to the originals. So the originals can never be reversed. But maybe the next generation, if they come, and they come
as
not as a whole klal, but as a pratim, then they can be accepted.
Right. Do we know why David made the Gzera?
Yeah, the Rambam gives a whole explanation, which I have, I think, in front of me. Let me just read to you the Rambam. as to why David HaMelech made this gezeirah. It has to do with the Maisa of the Bnei Shaul. You have to know a little bit Tanakh here. What perek did we say it was? Perek Yud Gimel? Let's see if I'm right.
On top of the page.
Yeah, what does he say?
This is the place. Yud Gimel, Yud Dalad.
Excellent. Yud Gimel, Yud Dalad. Okay, that should be.
In where?
Of Isuri Bir. Right, the Rambam dedicates two chapters to the laws of Gerus. And he says the following. Why aren't I finding this here? Just 1 second. Let me get my history. There are two different Rambams and I'm confusing them. Just 1 second. Which Rambam are we looking at now? Okay, so good. So the Rambam is Perek Yud Beis, Halacha Chav Beis, and then there's a Rambam Perek Yud Gimel. Let's see if we can get the two Rambams. Yeah. The Rama says the following: Ba David the Gazar Aleim Perkid Beis Alachav Kivon Shall He Kansu Bekal Li Olam. Okay, there's a lot here in the Rama. We don't need all this. The Lama Gazar Aleim Hu Beis Dino Lifisha Ra Azus Viachzorius Shahoisa Bahem. The Aisha Bikshu Shivas B'nei Shol B'chir Hashem L'tlosam the Hargum V'lo Rachmu Aleihem Rachmu Aleihem. So there's an entire episode in Tanakh which led David to a very strong, extreme conclusion about the, call it the genetic structure of this nation of Givonim, that they are Azus and Achzorios. And again, I don't know exactly what happens when a person is misgayer. Do they remove their, change their genetic code, like you say, Kakot and Shadol and Domi? But this seems to indicate that, you remember the statement where it's in Yevamos that Gerim were Kinespachim, were Kisopachas Yisrael. It does seem, again, I don't want to say this out loud because I'll get into deep trouble, but that sometimes in certain cases, okay, we'll say very limited cases, we'll say, the Gerim still come with the certain attributes which are like forever embedded in their genetic code. So that, I'm just quoting the Rambam to you. I haven't gotten a chance to research this. But well, let me show you a different Rambam. This is in Perek Yud Gimel, the next Perek. This is really a very interesting Rambam, which again, if we were studying Gerus, you know, Gerus is a very hot topic these days. I was called upon to give a series in the OU on contemporary halacha. I'm thinking of giving on Gerus, but I don't know. They told me I could choose whatever topic I want. It's interesting because the regular lectures in the OU are going on summer vacation. So he says the following. The Rambam is talking about the fact that Shlomo HaMelech and Shimshon HaGibor, they married a lot of non-Jewish women. So the Rambam says, it's based on a sugya in Yevamos, Al yale al daitcha sheshimshon amoshia es Yisrael or Shlomo Melech Yisrael shenikra yedida. Don't raise the thought on your mind shenasu nashim nachrios bigiyusam, and they just slept out a bunch of shiksas and they married them. I mean, that does seem to be the pshat, right? He says, no. Okay, again, he has sources. You have to look up the Magen Mishnah has a whole long list, and the Kesef Mishnah has a different sugya. Ella, sod hadover kachu. Now, if the Rambam calls it a sod, I don't know if he means it's a political secret, or he means that there's something metaphysical going on over here, something mystical. But he says the following. He says that Elisoda Dovakahu, Sha'mitzvah nechona kishiyovo ager o gioris liskayer both kim achrov shema biglal momon o b'shvil sroga o mivnei apachad. Ram gives a whole long list of reasons why a person, I don't know why he doesn't give the most popular reason, they want to marry someone, but anyway, so he talks about the fact that they want money, so I don't exactly, I guess if you convert you get a good job, I don't know what, or they're afraid of the Jewish people. He says the fact that that we have to check them out. Imlo nimtzo lehem ila, let's say they pass all our exams, right, and they prove themselves to be sincere. Modin o son, we have to notify them, and I'm assuming this is Bezdin. Koved ol haTorah, v'torach sheyesh ba'asiyoso, kidei sheyifreshu. You know, this is the philosophy that we don't want to encourage gayers, we want to, on the contrary, discourage gayers. If even so, after all this description, kiblu velo pirshu, they continue insisting on becoming gerim. Veroimo sof shechazu me'ava, that they really want to come to the Jewish nation out of love. Mekablin osan. Lefichach lo kiblu bezdin gerim kol yemei David u'shlomo. Now, wait a second. There's something very odd going on over here. Because the rabbi has just finished saying, don't entertain the idea that Shlomo Melch married Shiksas, right? He definitely, as we'll soon see, was Megayer. But then in the same breath, he says, Lo kiblu bezdin gerim kol yimei davru Shlomo. I'm tempted to think that the rabbi is going to make a distinction between Bezdin and Shlomo himself. Again, I have no clue what's going on here. You know, how Shlomo could be Megayer a woman and there's no Bezdin. You understand what I'm saying? Just, again, if you bear with me for a moment. He says, V'mei David, why did they refuse Gerim? Shema min apachad chazru, because the people of Israel were a great military might. U'b'mei Shlomo, Shema b'shvil ha-malchus, Hatova v'agdola shahoyu v'Yisrael chazru. Maybe the Jewish people had this image, aura of being a great kingship, but they didn't really love the religion of Israel. And he says, kol shachozer min agoyim b'shvil divrei avoy havoya olam eino migerei hatzedek. The afal pichen, hayu gerim, shenis gairu b'mei dovim shloma b'fnei hedyotos. Maybe that key word here is hedyotos. So we know that in Hilchus Bezdin there are two types of batei din. There's a bezdin shal mumchim and there's a bezdin shal hedyotos. So it could be that there was a head-on collision here between the higher courts that were made up of mumchim and the lower courts that are made up of hedyotos. Now, what happens in this scenario? That on the one hand, the Bezdin, the real Makoy Bezdin, is not happy with these gerim, but on the other hand, the hedyotos went ahead and were megayering them. So the Rama writes, "Hayu Bezdin agol choshishin lahem." They took this gerim seriously. Lo dochin osan, achas shekvar tovlu. So they already had tefillah, you know, because both the male and the female require tefillah. Mikolakom, he says, even though they were motivated by the wrong motivations, but yet lo makarvin osan. So I don't know what that means. Maybe it means that you can't be mesadik kedushin for them. I don't know. Then he writes, ulefisha gir shlomo noshim. Again, what does he mean, gir shlomo noshim? Was he throw him into a mikveh and poof, that Gerim? Where's the best? I mean, we need a best for Gerim. Maybe he's implying he was a best shel adyotos. I don't know. V'chein shimshon gier v'naso v'adover yadua shel ochazru elu elu b'shvil davar. They were not in the least interested and motivated to be Jewish. V'lo al pi bezdin girum. So what was the gear if not al pi bezdin? I mean, is there an enterprise of Gerus without a Bezdin? I don't know, unless he means a Beis Din Shel Yom Tov. Is therefore, since there was never a Beis Din, says the Rambam, Choshman HaKosuv Kilu Ein Goyos. So in the Pesukim in Tanakh, these ladies, these women of Shimshon or of Shlomo, are described as Goyos. Ubi Suran Omdim. But on the other hand, I think he's implying that Shlomo HaMelech would recognize them as Gerim, otherwise why is he having relations with Goyos? Because he was Megayer them, whatever that means. I don't know what it means. Either it means he was Megayer them, which makes no sense, or it means it was a Beis Din Shel Yotos. So again, at this point, Rav Moshe, I'm just giving you the Rambam, and you can do whatever you want with it. I have no clue what's going on here. I understand what the Rambam is bothered by. You know, on the one hand, the Torah describes the... Oh, I need that. No, I need that for another class.
Yeah, I know, I just pulling it out.
Yeah, just give it to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thanks. I need this for a class which might be taking place soon.
Did David Melch make any takonis with regard to anyone who was... did marry from these previous 600-700 years from the time of
Yeshua? On the moment
well, if they married already, and they already had the badge of DNA, but they're already married. They had children, grandchildren, great grandchildren. They're all there. There could be thousands and thousands of Yidden running around who were the product of those marriages.
Right.
It was hundreds of years later.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what he did. If Beis Din went ahead and was Megayer them, according to the writer of the Meiri, they're living on an ideal world. They're assuming that no Beis Din would violate, you know, the will of David HaMelech and that Gzeirah. But you're saying that maybe, you know, if the Rambam's favorite reference, look what's going on at the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Look what's going on at the time of Shimshon HaGibar, as we call him, right? There's some sort of hop-lop, I don't know, Gzeirah, I don't know what you call it. So that's why I say in contemporary life, you know, Gairus is such a heavy issue, you know, with the Russian Jews and all this. Rav Drukman, you know, is being a guy and then like, I don't know the facts on the ground, so don't believe a word I say, but, you know, carte blanche, he's being a guy and then.
No. That's not what happens.
Even if he knows they're not going to be religious, or? The question.
They're going to be semi-religious.
Ah, semi-religious. Okay.
They're Kabbal.
Yeah, but the Rambam says they have to accept 613 or bust. I wouldn't get to that Rambam yet. No. Anyway, it's complicated.
He doesn't say that.
The army now has a whole program for Russian Jews, you know, because of the question of whether they're Jewish or not, they send them to families and Nativ. Nativ. It's a beautiful program. Again, the Russians are not forced, they're compelled to join the program. It's voluntary. But it can last for 6 months or a year. And if the program succeeds, the Russians are going to want real Gerus, you know, with a full-fledged love of Judaism.
Not a lot of them continue to that level.
Really? They drop out on the way. Yeah. I have a friend in the Lower East Side of Manhattan who is a rabbi who presides over the Gerus of the RCA Beis Din. And he tells me that the Megayer are about 100 Gerim a year on an average. Approximately. But he says when we start the program, there are a lot more in the group. They drop out like flies, he said. You know, because it's a very serious business. Okay, I didn't want to get into the contemporary issues. Obviously, you know, I would have to prepare Yom HaLaila for this, which I didn't have a chance to do. But if you take a look at the Mishkanos HaRoim, he quotes this Rambam here on the left column on the top. He says... Ayin Baramam, etc. Shekosav al Yal al Daitcha Nasu Shimshon Vishlomo Noshim Nochios Bigiusam. Again, even though the Tanakh calls them Goyim, El Fisha Gir Shlomo Noshim Vinasan Vichain Shimshon Gir Vinasa. Again, I don't know what that means. Vadover Yodua Shalo Chazru Eluel Vishvil Dover Volal P. Besdin Giru. I found this very intriguing because he wants to take the lumpness of the Rambam of the Ravid, and you know the Tzvei Dinim, you know that you could have a Geirus that's partial and only goes to this level. And it generates the chiyuv of kedushas Yisrael in the entire mitzvahs, and yet it's not a geirus as far as being makabel them into knisa l'kol because they were motivated by the wrong reason, and he wants to place this into the Rambam to explain the whole episode of Shimshon and his wives and what's his name, and Shlomo and his wives. And that would mean the following, that the machlokas between Shlomo on one side of the fence and the Eivishter on the other side is whether or not this is a full-fledged Gerus. Meaning even the Eivishter admits that it's a partial Gerus, and this Gerus would be valid as far as Tariq Mitzvah is concerned, that's the Ravid Shita. But yet, since they're Kigeri Arayos for the wrong reasons, we're not going to allow them Knisa L'Kol. That was the opinion of the author of the Torah. Exactly. But Shlomo HaMelech understood that name. That if you already Modav Mixas, that there's a partial Gerus, then why not go all the way? You know, it becomes a Lav D'Shemach Lokus between... I mean, you could always ask you the Kasha Lav D'Shemayim, but leaving out that Kasha, I assume the Chacham agreed with the Ribono Shlomo.
But there's something illogical about this idea that someone who's not Megayer for the right reasons...
Right.
Mistama, their motivation is not to be a Kabbalah Tariq Mitzvah.
Correct.
And yet the one thing we give them is Chiyuv and Tariq Mitzvah. You can't have anything else of Judaism. You can't marry into Judaism. But we're going to throw in Tariq Mitzvah, even though we know that's the one thing
say,
you don't want.
I would say it's a lot more profound than that. I think on a whether it's a conscious level or a subconscious level, they realize that if they profess and they're obedient to the Mitzvah HaTorah, then they'll be safe. They'll be spared. In other words, in some part of their brain... And this is true, by the way, for many goyim today. Like, for example, those who are pro-Israel down south, you know, the evangelists and all those. I believe, maybe I'm wrong, again, Rabosa, you're bigger scholars than I am. I believe that in one part of their brain, they believe that there's something going on over here, that the Torah is real.
Scripture.
But, I mean, it's not just... lip service. Mm-hmm. And again, this might be on a subconscious level, you know, they're Christians and the devout Christians, but I think on a deeper level, there is one part of them that may recognize that the Torah is emes. And in a case of imposed... Yeah.
It's on a conscious level. They acknowledge that.
They acknowledge that
it was superseded.
But not the mitzvah. Not
the process continued. No.
Yeah, so God went the other way, right? Then he dropped the Jewish people. I'm going a step further. I'm saying that on a deeper level, they don't buy that bunk, you know, of Christian theology, that God... That's what I'm saying. Again, I don't know if it's the evangelists, I don't know, you know, I don't know who it is, I'm not an expert in Christianity, but what I'm trying to say is that if the non-Jews realize that, hey, we got to do something here, you know, we're really getting in deep trouble, they may actually believe in one part of their psyche that by observing the Tariq Mitzvahs, God will have mercy on them and protect them. So again, they're not motivated because l'chatchila they want to embrace Judaism, but at the end of the day, they may be embracing Judaism on the level of Tariq Mitzvahs, which is really interesting. Do you understand what I mean? That even a guy could appreciate. I mean, the Rambam has a whole discussion about a guy who wants to observe Shabbos, a guy who wants to wear tefillin. Are we allowing to? You know, say, why would a guy want to wear tefillin? Very strange, you know. You know, some of the sociologists say that there's such an admixture today of Jewish blood amongst the goyim. I know someone who believes, I think he's way off the mark, but he believes that every other Italian is Jewish. Or at least has Jewish blood in him. That 50% of the Italians are Jewish. In some sense. I don't mean halachic Jewish.
You know what you say about Spaniards?
Spaniards also. The admixture of Jewish blood. Now, are these people anti-Jewish or pro-Jewish? I don't know. You know, we know that Jews can be the biggest problem. But all right, I want to just go on, if you don't mind, Rabbi Osai. Let's just take a look at the next paragraph, where he says that Ikar Shita Sarashi, he now has a real Lavdisha analysis of Rashi. Rashi says that the whole business of Nesina and the Isar Knisa L'Kol is all Durabbanon under the Gzeir of David. On a Doraisa level, Lotus Chatimov doesn't apply because the Geiris is valid. Here we have a Machlokes Rishonim. He says the following: Im akzera haisa b'mefurish le'iser chitun, did David HaMelech just, you know, zap them with an iser chitun, and that's the Rabbanan? Oh, David gazar aleim avdus. In other words, David's approach was not what you'd call iser v'heter. You know, it doesn't belong to Ebenezer. It really belongs to Choshen Mishpat, And what David HaMelech did is, he, again, I think, I don't know, there's no footnote here, but I think he's flexing the muscle of what's called Hefker Bezdin Hefker, that the Bezdin of David HaMelech would acquire ownership in a monetary sense over these Jews. When I say Jews, because according to Rashi, on a Daraisa level, they are Jews. And what the Gzeir of David HaMelech was all about is Gazar Lehem Avdus. Now, once there is a status of an Eved because of the Shibud of Avdus, which David HaMelech could flex the muscle of Koch Bezdin for Hefker Bezdin Hefker, Memela Nesru Lava Bakal. So it's not that David started with Gzeira Derabbanan of Iser Chasnus, but rather he started with Avdus and Shifchus. Once there's an imposition of the status of Avdus v'Shifchus, then Memela, as a natural result, Nesru Lava Bakal.
Eved Ifri? What kind of Eved Ifri?
Oh, okay, what kind of Eved? Right, let's go on. He says, Atosis Visugyan, he says that Tosis vacillates back and forth on this very issue, Kosvu di Avdus Gazar Alehem, that what David HaMelech did was, he imposed the status of Avdus on them. Umitoch Kach, as a result, Nesru Lava Bakal, Mishum Lo Yia Kodesh. Now, a Yia Kodesh clearly doesn't apply to an Eved Ivri. It only applies to an Eved Knani. So an Eved Knani has a partial Gerus. So was David HaMelech able to, in a sense, what's the word I want to use? Truncate the Gerus and say that, well, their Gerus is going to be... In other words, when David HaMelech says that I'm going to make a Gzera that these people are only... Avodim and Shvachas, but they're not full-fledged Gerim, and as a result, there's an Isolav of a call of Lo Yeh Kadesh, or can David impose upon them some sort of monetary status as Gerim, and as a result of that, there should be an Isolav of a call if the Gerus is complete, and he's not truncating the Gerus, he's not saying that this is not a full-fledged Gerus, but rather it's a partial Gerus, then I can understand the Yisr of Lo Yeh Kodesh. But if on the other hand he recognizes the Geirus as a full-fledged Geirus and he's just exercising his rights in Dini Mamonos, why would that, or how would that effectuate a Lo Yeh Kodesh? So Tosis himself asks this question, Vehikshu, Imkein Amai Yesh L'Nesina Knas, Hotnan B'masnisa D'L'Shivcha Ein Knas. If the nature of David HaMelech's Gzera was not just an Isur, you know, let's just keep them out of the Jewish, you know, intermarrying into the Jewish people, but rather he made them into Shvachos, then the Mishnah itself says that Shivcha doesn't get Knas. Right? The Mishnah doesn't actually say that Shivcha doesn't get Knas. It says that by implication. Right? If Shivcha was Nishtachara before she reached the age of 33 years old, then she gets knas, implying that if she's a regular shivcha and the shivcha took place after the age of 3, she would not get knas. Well, if David made them into a shivcha, then how could they collect knas? And that's Tosis' objection. I think that Tosis is implying that we're not talking about a situation where David HaMelech said they have the status of shvachos, but rather David HaMelech established that the gerus is incomplete, and it becomes a gerus similar to that of a shivcha. Od hikshu betosfis mehod esnam bekedushin decheruri unesini mutarim lavas ebezeh my hacheruri yasiri b'shivcha. Now, if you're going to tell me that the status of a nesina is equivalent, based on David's exercising his rights, to a shivcha, then how can a shivcha marry into a charuri? The charuri has a full fledged status as a Jew. Vitirtzu, the Yeshlomer de Lav Mamish Gazar Aleim Avdus, Lesar below Yeh Kadesh. In other words, we're not magically making them into Shvachos, because again, if we did so, then they couldn't marry a Charuri, and not only that, they couldn't collect Knas because the Shivcha doesn't get Knas. But rather, David simply imposed on them a whammy, you know, a status of an Isa Knisa Lakal. So what did Tosis think in his Kasha? What did Tosis think in his Teretz? ubira shakla v'tari shabitosusu the betchilei v'inu tosus the gozer leim avdus mamish bekinyan aguf. That David HaMelech exercised his rights under the power of the authority of Hefker Bez and Hefker, and he was kona them. He made a kinyan on these shvachos, meaning when it's Yad Yisrael Tkefa, then the Bezdin of Yisrael could make a non-evid into an evid, a non-shivcha into a shivcha. Is therefore, Tosfos raises two objections. He says, if that be the case, if David HaMelech exercised those rights, then each woman of the Nesina becomes a shivcha, and then we have a violation of the law of Luya Kodesh. How can there possibly be a collection of knas? How can there possibly be a permission to marry a charuri? Abba betirutim. And when they gave their answers, Svirle, they rejected their original position. Lo gazar aleim ela shibud bi alma lamaisi yedeyim. Ulefichach leka isu Torah. They don't have the status of a shivcha under Luya Kodesh. But again, what he doesn't spell out here is, okay, fine, there was a shibud. If there's a shibud, how does that engender an Iser Knisa L'Kol? So that, I think, you have to add that David HaMelech gave them a new status of an Iser Knisa L'Kol. Again, I don't mean to compare it, but it's like a mamzer d'Rabbanan. The Deraisa is not a mamzer, the Rabbanan consider him a mamzer. So the Rabbanan have the authority to create an Iser Knisa L'Kol and a Psul Kol when it doesn't exist. I don't know, he doesn't spell that out.
But what's that going to do with the Shibud? Why can they just institute that Iser level of
Kol? No, the Shibud then, according to Tosis, is only a method, as we said before, Shalo Yitamu Behen. You remember that was Tosis' Shita. Vatam Kamo Shikos Rabban, blah, 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 blah. I'll leave it there right now. The Nesina Adifa Mishivcha, the Shivcha Ein Lai Knas Lefisha Gufo Kanoi Kinyan Gamur. Right? How do you make a woman into a shivcha? You need what's called a kinyan ad guf, as opposed to a shibud, which is only a kinyan peros, which means that the profit or benefit from their labor belongs to the master, but he doesn't own the evan himself. Aval nesina giorisi, and David HaMelech never undermined that status of a nesina as a gioris. The ain gufa kanui, and there's no gufa kanui, and therefore, if it's not gufa kanui, they have their own status as gerim or gioros, and the fact that there's some sort of a kinyan peros, that's not going to be relevant to the knas. So this is a very interesting question that we have to approach. You know, we have to entertain it as we learn a lunaris. What happens to a Nara who doesn't have a Kenyan peros, she's Meshubedes, right? And now the question is, does she collect Knas or not? He's assuming that if there's no Kenyan Aguf and there's no status as a Shivcha, there's only a Kenyan Shivud Mamon as far as Kenyan peros is concerned, then she can collect Knas. The Kevin She'ain Gufa Kanui Leka El Shivud Bialma Veleka Lav the Lo Yia Kodesh. So this is interesting that Tosus is vacillating back and forth about the nature and the mechanics of the Gzeras David and whether or not David actually made these ladies and all the descendants of the Givonim, the Nesinim, into a Shifchan and an Eved, or it's simply some sort of a Kenyan Shibud Bialma, but it's not a real Kenyan Aguf, it's only a Din of Maisi Adayim, and the products of their labor accrue to the Jewish masters, but they don't have a Kenyan Aguf to make them into a Shifcha with the love of Lo Yekodesh, and that's what Tosfos vacillates back and forth. Alright, Rav Osai, let's stop here in the Mishkanos HaRoim. I promise you, Belinetta will continue, but in the meantime, I want to go through the Sugya.
Quick aside, the Kesef Mishnah has been dying from the word Yigyotos in the Rambam.
Yes.
It doesn't say based in Yigyotos. He holds it wasn't a based in law.
Yes.
Now, how do you explain how any individual people were able to help Nagayer, but he says if it meant based in, he would have written the word based.
So what exactly was the status of, did he gather together three people? Like, what did he do? I don't know.
Yeah.
You have to know more about it.
You don't need a based in. Yigyotos is good enough for Gators.
Right, but the Kesemish saying they weren't even a Bezin Shel Adyotos. Is that what you're saying?
Same thing, yeah.
Today, for example, they don't use a Adyotos for
Correct.
And one rob, and you have two schleppers who are.
Right. Shlichusai,
you don't even need a rob.
All right, how many people here have a Gemara Ksuvos, you know, that we can now learn the Gemara? If not, if there should be one or two somewhere on the table here. You just have to find them.
There's one here.
If Sam was here, he'd make some photocopies for us, but I think he's already out for the summer. I'm not sure. So we're on Daf Choftes Amid Aleph. So let's just divide up the Mishnah into three sections. The first section of the Mishnah deals with the issue of what's called Nashim Psulos. Nashim Psulos itself divides up into two categories. There are Nashim Psulos, which mean that he's not allowed to marry her. And the chiddush of the Mishnah is nevertheless he pays knas. Of course, in the parasha of Ma'anes, it says two things. It says, number one, that shalom yishalom kemora psulos, he has to pay that knas. And it also says that v'hoyla v'lo yuchal shalcha kol yomov. Right? What's the pasuk? I'll read to you the whole pasuk. It says, v'nasana isha shochevi mola via nara chamishim kes v'lo siya l'isha. And then it says, lo yuchal shalcha kol yomov. And now the Mishnah, in the first part of the Mishnah, is separating between these two dimensions. That there will be an implementation of Venasa Na'ish, etc., Chamishim Kesev, even though we cannot implement the Velosia Isha because she's an Isha Psula. The second section of the Mishnah addresses the question of Naira Besula. Right? The Torah opens up this parasha by saying ki motz ki yimtza ish nara besula. So what's the status of three women, the Gioras, the Shvuya, and the Shivcha? Do we consider them, do we classify them as a besula? But we don't know up front that they had any ba'ila, so let's assume they have a cheskas besula. And the Mishnah establishes, no, that on normal conditions, we have exceptions, but a Gioras, a Shvuya, and a Shivcha is considered to be a Ba'ula. Right? They live in a society where there's Hefkerus, and there probably was a Ba'ula. In the case of a Shvuya, she's been captivated by Goyim, who will unfortunately violate her. And the Mishnah establishes the exception to the rule is if they entered into the status of a Nara Besula because they terminated their state of Gerus or Shvuya or Shivcha before they were Re'uil Abiyah, before their third birthday. And then we have the third part of the Mishnah, and that is Chayve Krisus. And the Mishnah wants to Mechadesh that we don't apply the principle of Kimle B'Ravamine, because this is what's called an Onesh Bidei Shamayim, and therefore the Mishnah ends with the words Ein Bohem Misas Bezdin. So these are not arayos, which are capital punishments. And later on, the Mishnah is going to address the case of a man who rapes his own daughter, Chas V'Shalom, right? And in such a case, he doesn't pay knas because he's chayav misa. That's a cardinal Misas Bezdin. But the list of arayos here in our Mishnah is a list of Chayve Krisus. And in case of Chayve Krisus, we do not apply the principle of Kimle D'Ravine, hence he pays the Knas. So far, so good. The Gemara now is upset with the word Elu. The word Elu at the introduction of this Mishnah implies Elu v'lo acheros, as if to exclude any others. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because the Mishnah is listing the psulos. So could it be that Elu, only these don't collect, only these collect knas, but Ksheros would not collect knas? That doesn't make sense at all. But the Gemara answers, no. The word Elu here is coming to exclude psulos sheyesh b'hem misas bezdin, Now, the following is a list of psulos which have either a chiyuv lav or a chiyuv kares, but they do not have a chiyuv misas bezdin, hence there's no kimlei bidarabmi. Then we get to the main sugya for today, and that is the sugya of a ketana. So the elu is, it restricts the knas to naira. It doesn't restrict to these naros who are psulos, because we know that ksheros would also be included in the knas, but it does seem to exclude ketanos. And that's what the Gemara wants to pick up now. So my suggestion is that we simply go through the Gemara, try to explain it, and see if we can get sort of a little bit of an overview of the sugya. So Gemara says the following. Naira in, okay, so we're counting right after the two dots from the bottom, it's about 10 lines up. Does that make sense? Everybody has it? Mm-hmm. Naira in, ketana lo. The Mishnah seems to imply that elu naros, that only naros are on the list of knas, but not a ketana. Now, maybe the Torah meant, now on the one hand the Torah did say nara, but maybe what the Torah meant by nara was even a nara, and how much more so a ketana. So the Gemara says, Mantana, who is the Tana who maintains that the knas applies exclusively to a nara between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, but not before that? Rabbi Meir, he. Tisanya, ketana mi bas yom echad, v'ad shetovi shtei saros. We're talking about a ketana. So he says here, b'mokom ha'yadua lehavos seh. He doesn't want to, you know, spell out where these saros are. I think they're called genital saros, and she is up to but not beyond this point. So she hasn't yet exhibited these shtei saros. So that means, that seems to mean that her age is at this point is irrelevant. Now, she might be already 12 years old, but ad she told me shtei saros, she hasn't brought out shtei saros. Is yeshla mecher v'ein lo knas. So yeshla mecher is based on the parsha in Shmos, v'chiyimkar ish es bito li'oma, that the Torah gave the father a schus in his bas ketana to sell her as an oma ivriya. Once she has shtei saros, she leaves the status of ketana and she enters into the status of a nara. He cannot sell her. So mi bas yom echad v'ad shetovi shtei saros is yesh la mecher. Okay. Then Rabbi Meir says v'ein lo knas, meaning if the father has the schus to sell her as an oma, then he does not have the schus to receive her knas. So mechira li'amus and knas of onus mefata are mutually exclusive. You cannot have a piggyback ride and say there's an overlap and both mechira and knas will coexist simultaneously. It's either or. So in the case of a ketana, where the Torah spells it out, that ki yimkar ish as bito li oma, that he can sell his daughter as an oma, then by definition, says Rabbeir, he does not have knas. Now again, you could always ask the question, okay, he cannot have knas, which again, we don't know what the lumbus is, why why the fact that he has mecher has, why can he have both mecher and knas? But whatever that is, you might ask a different question. That's only as far as the schus ha'av. But what about her own schus? Why can't she collect the knas herself? So I think the answer is because she's a ketana. And if she's a ketana, she doesn't have a yad to collect money, or in this case a knas as compensation for her being victimized. The only way we can understand how there could be a knas and a schus to collect that knas is only if her father has that schus to collect the knas. She alone, she herself, could not have the schus to collect the knas. But in the case of a ketana that the father is schus to sell her as an oma, he therefore does not have a schus to collect her knas. So ein lo knas means that she cannot collect the knas because she's a ketana. Her father cannot collect the knas because the Torah said that the father has rights at this point in the child's life only to sell her as an oma, but not to collect knas. Umishe tovi shtei saro, so now she becomes a nara, v'adshe tiboger, for this 12-month period, yesh lo knas v'ein lo mecher. Now that she's a nara, she gets knas, but again, Rabbi Meir Lishitoso, that mecher and knas are mutually exclusive, therefore, once she enters into the age of knas, then by definition, he, the father, does not have rights to sell her as an omer. Now, the sugya here does not tell us exactly why the father could not sell his daughter when she's a ketana, which seems to be the very fundamental premise of this sugya. Correct? Because it says ein lo mecher. Ein lo mecher means that when the Torah says ki yimkar ish es bito liyom, it's not talking about a nara, it's talking about a ketana. But elsewhere in Shas, in Mesech de Erechin, the Gemara says the following: Kal v'chomer umak tana shemachra avio l'shivcha kishenies nara yotzei lecheres kol shkein shezu shelo nimkara ad sheniesa nara lo tuchal limka. So Rashi quotes this Gemara in Erechin with the Kal v'chomer, and the Rashi says you want to know why ein lo mecher once she has two saras, is because if he had sold her, if the father had sold her as an oma before she had two saras, she goes free when she produces two saras. So kol shkein that he can't sell her if she has two saras. If he already sold her, how much more difficult it is to remove that status as an oma. And yet the Torah says with simanim she goes free. It's a little bit similar to an eved who goes free after 6 years. So here this woman goes free after simon. Now, if you're telling me that she goes free and we undermine her status as an omen fria when she has simon, then how much more so that he can't create the status of an omen fria and sell her if she already has the simon? That's the kavachon. So it seems to me that what Rabbi Meir is saying here is that simonim, again, let's see. Simonim. You see, I would say the following, that according to Rabbi Meir, simonim generate narus, and narus and mecher are tarti disaster, they're mutually exclusive. You could have learned it a different way. You could have said that it's not that simonim generate narus, and once she's a nara, he can't sell her. It's a separate din that simonim remove the avuhus. It's a didn't simonin.
Remove
the avuhus, her status as an oma. Name. Rav Meir says not that's not the pshat. The pshat is not that the simonin remove the avuhus, but rather her state of narus removes the avuhus. The concept of avuhus cannot be reconciled with narus. They cannot coexist. Therefore, much more so, we can't sell her when she's a nara. You understand what I'm saying? That according to Rav Meir, the simonim are playing a different role. I would call it a gili milsa. The simonim established that she's a nara. Once she's a nara, then she cannot be an om.
So it's a function of age, or it's not a function?
I don't know if I'd call it age, because again, you need both the age element and the simonim, so it's A plus B, but the joint forces of A plus B create narus. Once she's a narus, she can't be an oma. There's no such thing as a naru who's an omivria. That's what Ramey is basically saying. Therefore, if the father wants to sell her as an oma, and she's already a naru, it can't get off the ground. But you could have said otherwise. It would have been possible to say that it's not halacha in narus, it's halacha in simonim. That the fact that she's an oma and she had simonim, there's a power in the simonim when they emerge to be mafkia amus. So it's not that the simonim is a gili milsa that she's a nara, but rather it's a din in the narus, in the simonim themselves. There's a power inherent in the simonim to remove amus. But if that be the case, why can't he sell her as a nara? The father could sell her as a nara, if not for Rabbi Meir. You follow him saying, I'm just arguing against Rabbi Meir. Let's see if Rashi says anything. The Ela Mecher, Kirisanya, the Erchin, Yochol Yimkar Olamis Bitok Shinara, Amr Kavachon Mechura Kvayotza. Is there a comment here about the text of this Rashi? Just one second. What's the Aleph? Yotza b'simonim. He's Achshav she'eno mechura, eno din shelo timkar. If she was already sold, she goes out with simonim. Then for sure, if the simonim could break up the amhus, how much more so that he cannot sell her lechatchila up front as an oma if she has simonim. But it's very interesting because Rashi himself says yotza b'simonim. That's the girsa that we have here. The yotza b'simonim sounds like there's a din of simonim being bimotzi her. You know what I'm saying? That she was sold as a katana. Simonim and katnus are antithetical. So there's halacha that the simonim, once they emerge, they remove her status as an ola. But it's a din of yotza b'simonim. If it's a din of yotza b'simonim, it's not necessarily a din of narus. So he had narus, right, where she didn't produce simonim, maybe she already has simonim, but she didn't produce them, then perhaps the mecher of the father selling her as an oma would be valid. Because let's look at the chachamim. Chachamim omrim, tana vibas sholosh shonim yom echor, v'yachati boger, yesh lo knas. The Gemara asks Knas in Mecher Lo, and the Gemara says Ema. Here we turn to Amid Beis, Ema Af Knas B'Mokom Mecher. So in other words, the Chachamim are saying that the father could sell her as an Oma, as a Ketana, but the father could receive at the same time, the father could receive the Knas, and she's a Ketana. Is af knas b'mokom mecher. There's no contradiction in the fact that he, the father, could sell her as an ov, at the same time he can collect the knas. Both could coexist in the case of a ketana. But what now is the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chacham? Rabbi Meir say, "Kol malchus sheyesh mecher ein knas." The Chacham say that no, that ain't that what?
Between three and a day till 12.
That's 12, she could have both mecher and knas.
That's Chacham, that's what the machlokas
is, right? So I'm trying to figure out, I mean, what brought Rabbi Meir to his conclusion?
Right.
And Rashi quotes a very logical Kal Vachomer. And Rashi's saying that. So again, there are two issues over here. One issue is whether or not there's knas as a ketana. And then the second issue is whether or not a nara has mechira. So that Rabbi Meir holds that the reason why there's no mechira is because of this Kal Vachomer. The Chachomer would accept this Kal Vachomer. The Chachomer only saying that Kal Vachomer knocks off the father's ability to sell when she's a Nara, but has nothing to do with whether the father has the privilege of collecting a Knas when she's a Ketana. So what is the Machlok between Rabbi Meir and Chachomer about a Ketana? Again, just on a superficial level, Rabbi Meir says that if the father is collecting his rights or implementing his rights to sell her as an omer, then there can't be knas. And the Chacham say, nein. Why can't you have both and piggyback one on top of the other? You could have both mecher and knas. And that's what he's saying. Ema af knas b'mokom mecher. That there's no contradiction in having mecher and then on top of it having knas. He writes here, "Shulikatana mi bashol shonav yom echad viatchti bor yesh lo gam knas milvad ma sheyesh lo gam mecher." So let's just see if this makes any sense. In other words, let's say we're saying that according to Rachamim, Meir Omer Kolmak Hashish. Sorry, let me just think about this one more time. According to Rabbi Meir, since the father has mecher, according to Rabbi Meir, mechira means there can't be knas. As Rabbi Meir knows such a thing, it would seem that the Chachamim makes sense. Except for the fact that it says Nara in the parash. Okay, fine. Nara means even a Nara. But as far as the fact that after she becomes a Nara, there's no Mecher, that doesn't seem to be a subject of any debate, and the Gemara in Erechin has a Kal Vachomer for that. So again, so once she's a Nara, there's no Mecher. Fine. But does Knas coincide or overlap with Mecher? The Meir says no, that can't be, and the Chachamim say yes. Maybe it means the following, that knas, mecher, indicates the dependence, and maybe knas means that if he's selling her, that since he has the ability to sell her as an oma, since he has the ability to sell her as an oma, therefore it means what? It means that the Torah appointed him and he has that control. So if he's ma'ane sar and she's a ketana, so now she becomes the ma'ane to pay the knas, and now he wants to become the bailim. So just Rameir holds that what? That the bailus over the knas is our bailus. Norvos, we have Alocha binu Rabbe Savia. So the father's actually collecting the knas on her behalf. Says Rabbi Meir, if that be the case, then it only makes sense that she collects knas if she's a nara. If she's a ketana, she's totally in the rishus of her father. How do I know she's totally in the rishus of the father? He can sell her as an omo. So since he can sell her as an omo, it means that she's totally dependent upon him. But knas is just reversed. Knas means that you victimize the woman, but then I have to add the proviso that binurei beisavi. So binurei beisavi is a separate halacha. But if you ask me what's the machayev, it's the isha herself. The machayev of the knas is the isha. How do I know that the machayev of the knas is the isha? Because, let's say Mikra Din Shekevi Mocheles, but the only reason that Mechila is not operative is because the father, you know, we don't undermine the father's rights to collect the knas. But Mikra Din, she should be able to be Mocheles. Now, you might ask me, well, why does the Torah say that she has these rights to collect the knas? And the answer is because she's already old enough to have emerged as a bardas. For example, if she makes kinyonim, she's considered a bardas. In mitzvah, she's chayav in mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. So she really has the full-fledged status of a bardas. That's going to be mechayav the knas. But if the father could sell her as an ama, that indicates that she's not considered an independent entity, an agent unto herself. She's like totally tofel to the father. Because otherwise, what right does the father have to sell her? She doesn't want to be sold. But the answer is she's not a gavra, so to speak. She doesn't have a status as a bar das. So Hashem says that, you know, she's like an extension of the father. So the father now can sell her even as an omo. So in Dine Mominus, you could say that her yad emerges when she becomes a nara. Rabbi Meir says that if she emerges as a bardas in Dine Mominus, when she becomes a nara, at that point she can be machayev knas. But if she's a ketana, she can't be mechayev knas because she's not a bar das. So memela, mechira and knas are mutually exclusive according to Rabbi Meir. Because is she able to be mechayev knas or not? Well, in the case of a ketana, I'll prove to you that she can't be mechayev knas because she's able to be sold by her father as an amo. So what rights does she have? The answer is that ketana is a labra das. The machayev of knas is violating a woman who's a bar das, and she now has rights to claim, and she has rights to claim that violation engenders a zchus mama. In other words, if he violated her, she has rights to collect mama. What mama? Whatever it is, a chamishim kesef or pgam or whatever payments he has to deliver. But to say that she could be mechayev that knas as a ketana, well, that we're not willing to say. But again, the language of Rabbi Meir is interesting. He says, "Kol makom sheish mechrein knas." I mean, why does he put his finger? Why is he pointing his finger at mecher? I mean, why don't you say that there's no knas because there's no bardas? You know, what do you have to go through this whole complicated somersault in the air and say, well, she has mecher and therefore she can't have knas? Does anybody say anything? Well, yeah, this is something for a bolchana.
The Sifta has a little footnote on it.
Where is it, here on the page?
Yeah, Os Memvav.
Memvav. Kosa Beshit Mekubetzes? Shekavonis Rabbi Meir, Yishatam She'en Knas Lektana. Okay,
saying that since she could be sold, it's like she already has a status of a shifra that doesn't get a kness, which I don't understand, but that's what it sounds like to me you're saying.
Yeah, he's not saying what I said. I don't know exactly what he means by shifra. I mean, there's no violation of lotia v'nos Yisrael kadesha, because otherwise she wouldn't get a kness for that reason. He was saying that she doesn't get a kness because she's a shifra. Doesn't sound like because her status as a Jewess is inferior. I mean, the father could sell her as an amma. That's like an eved ivri, but fine. So the father has chuyot in this girl, but I wouldn't call her a shivcha exactly. Who made idach bechol mokum sheyesh lo knas, which means that she is a nara. In kain pgimimasa pgimahi me'ata lo yelo mecher. In other words, now that she emerges as a bar knas, because she's already a nara, so therefore pgimasa pgimahi me'ata lo yelo mecher.
What
does he mean by lo yelo mecher? I don't see.
What pegima does she have that she became 12?
No, pegima that maybe no one will marry her or something like that. You know, she's now a woman who's been had, you know, so but therefore,
and that's only,
lo yelo mecher. I don't know what. No, this is very ambiguous. Let's see what he says in the name of the Tosis Yontif, if that'll help us. Tosis Yontif Kosav. Shatana nokat simon bi alma ladini met. Oh, it's not the way we said it, that because she is subject to mecha, therefore she doesn't get knas. No, don't read it that way. It's just a simon bi alma. But he doesn't tell you why then Rameir drew his conclusion. So that's the best I can do at this point. So let me just review my svara. You know, you're the jury, you can either take it or throw it out. I wanted to suggest that Rabbi Meir's logic, I mean, you see the Sheet of Gubetz is also trying to work out Rabbi Meir's logic. His logic is that the Machayev of Knas is the Isha herself. The Torah is Mezaka, the father, to befall, collect that because of the din of Benurel Beis Aviha, Kol Shvach Nurel Aviha. But the Machayev is her, to the extent to which she can be Mocheles. The only thing she can't be Mochel is because that Mechila is at the expense of her father. But in and of itself, there is Mechila. And let's say, for example, if her father's dead, she could be Mochelis. So we see that she was victimized, and now in monetary terms, forget about psychological terms, or in terms of, you know, what impact it has on her status in the market, so to speak. But just in terms of monetary law, the Torah says, you know what, there's going to be like a quid pro quo. He violated her, she has a right to sue him for damages. And that suit for damages is concretized, or how shall I say, is canonized as a knas of 50 kesef. That's what the Torah does. Mm-hmm. However, in a case of a ketana, she cannot be mechayev any mama. Why? Because who is she? She doesn't have any status. She's a labar das. I don't know. We'd have to do a study of nezikin and see what the din of a ketana is as far as nezikin. But at least in the context that we're working in about an ones, she's a ketana, and she cannot be mechayev knas. Now, how do I demonstrate that she's tofel, so to speak? She doesn't have a status. She doesn't emerge as a bar das to be mechayev knas. I prove it from mecher. The very fact that in the case of mecher, the father says, "I can sell you as an amma," and she has no rights, so to speak. You know, she doesn't have veto rights in any way to express her disapproval. That proves that she's not a mechayev in dini mamas. On the contrary, she is passive. She's like karka olam when it comes to dini mamas. Chachamim, on the other hand, say that that's not so. Now, the fact that a nara cannot be sold as an oma, that the Gemara pins on a kal v'chomer, not the Gemara here, but an erech that Rashi quotes. And that kal v'chomer itself is very fascinating and, you know, very intriguing, because you can argue against the kal v'chomer. The logical premise that underlies this kal v'chomer is that narus and mechira is a tarti de sastra. They're mutually exclusive. You can't sell a woman who's a nara. And I'll prove it to you, because if the father had sold her as a ketana, she goes free with naras. But the truth is that you can counter-argue. There could be, theoretically, naras and mechira, but the only problem is that simonim are mafkia, the father's chus. That's aloch and simonim. So perhaps in the case of a ketana, her status as an omer vriya will terminate with simonim, because that's a din of simonim. Simonim motziyim midei avdus, midei shifus. But in the case of a nara, who the father is, and the father is selling her as an omer, and she has two simonim, so what? That doesn't prove a thing, because there's no contradiction between naras and mechira. It's only a dinim simonim. That simonim remove her status as an omer. I mean, this may be totally in another question about whether simonim operate independent. I mean, Sammy, you were touching on this, hinting on it. Do simonim operate independent of shonim, of godless shonim, or it's all one din? So if you're going to say that simonim operate independent, then it could be that there's certain dinim of simonim ha-meshacharim, you know, ha-mafkiyah, that the simon itself is mafkiyah avdus, or in this case, amdus. But it doesn't mean that you can't sell a nara. So now the Gemara asks a question. We're going to have to stop for Minchas, but let's see if we can just at least introduce the next sugya. The Gemara says, where am I up to? Vahani b'nei knosa ninhu. So we're talking about noshim psulos, and they're collecting knas. Vahamai, ikri kan v'lo seal isha. Isha ruvila. When the Torah says that he has to marry her, it's only referring to a woman that he can marry. But if he was ma'anis, a woman who cannot marry, then he's out of the parasha. And the Gemara thinks he's out of the parasha both in terms of the mitzvah losia le'isha and in terms of the knas. Omer Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish is going to come up with a very complicated yalfusa. So the purpose of this yalfusa is to include even psulos in the parish of Knas. But the Gemara thinks, unless you have a derivation, logically, we should assume that since the Torah is describing a woman that is included in Velo Sia Le'isha, hence there's no Knas if she's not included in Velo Sia Le'isha. Alright then? So we'll stop here. And I just want to reiterate our invitation for tonight, for those who possibly could come with their families, to our house in Shoals at number 16 for a celebration for Lag BaOmer. We're starting at 7:30. Shoals at number 16 minus 2. Minus 2 means you have to go down 2 floors. And there'll be food. There'll be 7:30 officially. I don't know if we'll start exactly on time, but...
Well, the Gemara on Mem of the Day says this Rabbi Meir, and there the Gemara asks, my time to go to Meir.
And what does Gemara answer?
The answer is that he darshens with the pasuk. It says, "Velo tia leisha." But mahava atzma hakasam daru, for a woman that can give herself off to issues, is it the
then is mecha.
Then there's which way is it explaining why there's mecha? What's the knas? I think it's why there's no knas. Demakura gabe knas, velo tia leisha. She can only get a knas if she's in a position to marry herself off, which doesn't happen until she's 12. But when she's between 3 and 12, she doesn't have the ability, therefore, since Knas is juxtaposed in that pasuk, she loses the opportunity of Knas. That's what we mean. Rabbanan, they say, I'm a Kran Naira, feel a katana of the mashma.
But it is it's a little similar to what we were saying, perhaps. In other words, that the concept of knas applies when she's a bar das, you know, she's already emerged as a halakhic personality.
Yes.
And how do we gauge that? The fact that she can marry herself off. Is that correct?
Yeah, that may be exactly it, yeah. I mean, there's a lot, obviously, a lot to talk about there, a lot of the Farsha Marit, they probably...
It's strange that the Sheet of Gubetzis doesn't quote that Gemara.
No, exactly. Because the Sheet on that Gemara, on this Gemara too, on Mitman of this.
Okay, we'll break from them.